everyone, and welcome to Builders, a podcast from BetaWorks Studios about the amazing people who build things, the makers and the doers, not just the talkers, the people that are helping shape the world we live in. I'm Leila Oweda, and I'll be your guide. In Builders, we bring you a diverse mix of thinkers and leaders from the startup ecosystem. All the shows are recorded live at BetaWorks Studios, our club for builders located in the Meatpacking District of New York City. If you want to know what a club for builders really is, visit betaworks-studios.com. But these podcasts are a good reflection of life in studios. One week, it might be a discussion on crypto, the next, on how technology is affecting music festivals. Today, we're digging into taking blockchain mainstream. This is perfect for all members of the broader builder community, developers, entrepreneurs, product managers, designers, and dreamers. You're going to hear from Jason Goldberg, founder and CEO of OST, or Open Simple Token, a company based in Berlin that's doing just that, taking blockchain mainstream. Here, Jason talks about the rise of cryptocurrencies.
So you had a lot of people kind of jump into the market as they saw market gains. And this is not all that dissimilar from the dot-com bubble. The dot-com bubble, you know, takes a bubble sometimes to educate a market.
And then he uses a photography site called Unsplash to explain how you can actually build a business using this blockchain theory.
So they're looking at how do they use a blockchain token to actually turn this amazing growth story into a functioning economy.
After Jason, you'll also hear from OST founder and blockchain strategist Ben Bolin, who goes a bit deeper into the tech they're using to build OST on Ethereum.
If we don't get user adoption of these technologies, they still don't matter. You can build the nicest geeky things, but if no one uses it, it's just still sitting there in GitHub.
This fascinating look at the future of the internet and economy is introduced by BetaWorks and BetaWorks Studios founder and CEO, John Borthwick.
It's a pleasure to have Jason here and the Simple Token OST team. It's also a pleasure to have Mark Bonchek here, who's coming up a little bit later. I've known Mark for a long, long time, old friend and colleague and co-conspirator, and one day I want to have the title of Chief Epiphany Officer. So I think that's, I'd trade that out for executive any day. So it's great to have you here. You know, as Ben described, we've built this as a space, as a membership-based space. We open up certain events to the community and to the broader public. This topic here is one which I think that blockchain is just on the cusp of moving into mainstream, and we are delighted to have the Simple Token team who are here today, who are actually building a business about helping businesses think about how to tokenize. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it over to Jason, a friend and also co-investor in Unsplash and TweetDeck and some awesome things we've done in the past.
Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate it. So Ben and I are here from Berlin, and our company is about 60 persons globally right now. And we have about 20 of us in Berlin. We've got another 25-30 in Pune, India. Team now of 6 persons here in New York and a couple in Hong Kong. And before we get into it, just want to say a big thank you to John and Ben, the team from BetaWorks. Fantastic what you guys are doing here with the studio, and really appreciative of the opportunity to come here and talk to everyone about blockchain, about what we're doing at OST. We're not going to make this a sales pitch about OST. We want to keep this kind of really broader about the industry, about blockchain, about what it's going to take to help bridge the gap between blockchain and mainstream. I'll briefly introduce Ben, my co-conspirator. Ben and I met in Berlin a couple years ago. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've started many companies in New York, in California, in Seattle. I spent most of my time here in New York. A few years ago, I was working on a company in Berlin, and we had some ideas around blockchain tokenization early on in the life cycle of cryptocurrency. And Ben was working at a company called Monax, which is one of the pioneers in blockchain technology. And we just started batting ideas back and forth and started to brainstorm, how do we actually make some of these early innovations, how do we actually bring them to the mainstream? And that's basically the ideas that turned into Simple Token, OST, Open Simple Token, as we call it today. And so we're just going to dive into it and talk a little story about blockchain and how we get it into the mainstream today. So first question is, how many people in this audience own a, let's say, a Coinbase account? So pretty much everyone here. And how many actually own a crypto wallet where you own your own keys? It's a little less. How many have programmed in Solidity? A couple. How many have written a smart contract? A couple. Okay. How many have been to a cocktail party or dinner party recently where you've tried to explain to someone, maybe didn't quite get there, what cryptocurrency is and what a blockchain is? Pretty much everyone. All right. So the way I equate to where we're at right now with blockchain technology is very similar to 1993 internet. This is what the internet looked like in 1993. This is the Mosaic browser. Back in 1993, the technology that we were building on top of early protocols. It's actually quite ironic. One of our latest technologies working on OST we call Mosaic, but this was basically the early internet browser. And back then, it was a lot of confusion as to what is the internet, how does it work, will it be beneficial. And this is a video from 1993 I thought to play for everyone, because it's really analogous to where we're at today with blockchain.
Back now at 56 past, I wasn't prepared to translate that as I was doing that little tease.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Little mark with the A and then the ring around it.
At.
See, that's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Katie said she thought it was about.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I'd never heard
or
it.
Around.
I'd never heard it said. I'd always seen
around.
The mark, but never heard it said. And then it sounded stupid when I said it. Violence at NBC.
Yeah, I heard something around
big
or about
in the lunchroom.
See, there it is. Violence at NBC, GE.com. I mean,
well, what Allison should know.
What
do
is
you say
internet
that,
anyway?
Internet is that massive computer
right.
network,
mm-hmm.
the one that's becoming really big now.
What do you mean? That's big. How does one? What do you write to it like mail?
No, a lot of people use it and communicate. I guess they can communicate with NBC writers and producers. Allison, can you explain what internet is?
No, she can't say anything in 10 seconds or less.
Oh, Allison will be in the studio shortly.
What
does it mean?
It's a giant computer network made up of started from.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell us what this was.
It's like a computer billboard.
It's not a name. It's a computer billboard, but it's nationwide,
right.
and it's several universities and everything all joined together.
And right.
And others can access it.
And, right.
And it's getting bigger.
So that was the internet back in 1993. And so this is a chart showing Bitcoin's price over the last few years. And as you can see, this is, a lot of uncertainty, some hype, more uncertainty. And you look at the parallel as to kind of where we're at in terms of the cycle on blockchain. Here's John Oliver trying to explain to the world what a blockchain is.
Many people believe that the really exciting thing about it is the potential of the innovative technology that it's built on, and that's something called blockchain. Now, normally, if I wanted to send money to someone across the world, a bank would need to verify that transaction, and it could take days. But with Bitcoin, it is vastly faster because no bank is involved, and that is because blockchain technology allows a record, or a ledger, of every Bitcoin transaction ever made to be stored not in one place, but across vast numbers of computers. That is part of what people mean when they say Bitcoin is decentralized. And decentralization has a lot of theoretical advantages, from speed to security.
The key point here is that this is a distributed ledger. There is no central server. All the other ledgers that we have, all banking ledgers, all company ledgers, they all sit and reside inside that company, which means they have one point of attack. They can be hacked. JP Morgan was hacked by cyber thieves not so long ago. Home Depot, Target, we've had all these companies get hacked precisely because there's one central repository of information. The Bitcoin ledger resides on thousands of computers. You can't hack that.
And when you think about it, that sounds great. And because of the complicated process the network uses to verify records, it is very secure. Now relax, I'm not gonna get into what that process is or how it works, but I will share a really helpful, really dumb metaphor for why it is safe.
The way I like to think of it is that a blockchain is a highly processed thing, sort of like a chicken McNugget. And if you wanted to hack it, it'd be like turning a chicken McNugget back into a chicken. Now, someday someone will be able to do that, but for now, it's going to be tough.
Hold on. That is an absolutely horrible thought. So why is that reporter so happy about the idea? Because if anyone ever figures out how to turn a chicken McNugget back into a chicken, that chicken is going to be fucked up. He's going to spend the rest of his life suffering from PTSD and writing haunting poetry about the experience. The things I saw, buck, buck, bacaw. My body is whole, but what of my soul?
So you can see we're still trying to figure out how to explain what blockchain is. But you know, if you look at, this is the chart of the NASDAQ, and you see the bubble, dot-com bubble in 1999, 2000. You know, one of the questions everyone's going through right now, if you look back at the chart of kind of Bitcoin and where we're at, kind of, you know, with cryptocurrency, you know, are we right now, you know, are we past the bubble or are we still on our way up? And if you believe that we're, you know, that we're kind of in the crash right now, then you could say that maybe we're at the spot that's pointed out here in 2000. If you believe that, you know, we're still on our way up, then you'd say we're somewhere, let's say, around 1997. My theory is that we're still somewhere around 1993, and that there's going to be a long, long kind of cycle of up and down and up and down, but that the general progression is going to be up over the long term. And if you look even the NASDAQ here, obviously there was the crash with the dot-com bubble, but then you had massive recovery, and we're at today in terms of the growth of technology stocks. And regardless of whether you believe where we're at in that cycle, the fact of the matter is we're still really, really early in terms of crypto adoption. And we say crypto adoption, we really think about it in terms of mainstream adoption of blockchain technology. This is perhaps the best indication of how close we are to blockchain being able to be adopted by consumers on a mass scale, is that if you look at number of crypto wallets compared to mass market consumer applications, let's say Twitter or Instagram, or compared to, let's say, the largest online payment app today is WeChat Payments in China, which is actually now about 1 billion users. And if you look at where we're at with crypto wallets, 25 million today. And so we still have a long, long way to go and a lot more innovation to go in order to get there in terms of having a mass adoption of crypto and blockchain. Now, we might only be at 25 million wallets, but the growth has been steady. And if you look at this chart here, this is the quarter by quarter growth of crypto wallets, according to Statista, over the last few years. And what's interesting to note is, if you look at Q4 of last year, was massive growth because you also had a massive growth in terms of crypto prices. And so you had a lot of people kind of jump into the market as they saw market gains. And then you look at Q1 this year, you actually have a slowdown of the growth as there's a lot of fear and uncertainty in the market. And so you see people coming in because of speculative markets. And this is not all that dissimilar from the dot-com bubble. The dot-com bubble, it takes a bubble sometimes to educate a market. If you think about back, how many of you can remember it, but I remember back in 1998, 1999, my mom calling me up and saying, should I be buying Microsoft stock? Should I be buying, IBM stock? Or then became, these dot-com high flyers. And the question there, the stock market was educating consumers about the technology. And here we have the crypto market and people seeing gains is educating people about the underlying blockchain technology as well. Now, there is many, many differences between blockchain and the adoption cycle of blockchain versus the dot-com's adoption cycle. This here shows the price of Ethereum. And to me, we talk about Ethereum as the programmable blockchain, right? So Ethereum is based on smart contract technology. We'll talk more about here. But if you look at, it's been a very short period of time for the Ethereum takeoff. I mean, essentially, it was February, March of last year before Ethereum moved at all. And then suddenly, you had the ICOs develop, and you had people realize you could start to build very interesting technologies and layer two protocols and applications on top of Ethereum. And in the last, essentially, 15, 16 months, you see this massive growth of Ethereum. And so you think about where we're at in this cycle. In the dot-com cycle back in 1998, 1999, 2000, 2001, even after the dot-com crash, companies had to spend so much money just educating the world about the internet and even getting people connected to the internet. I remember John and I were at AOL in the year 2000, and we were, making presentations to the AOL team about how the entire dial-up business is going to die because broadband's taking over, and they didn't, no one listened to us at the time, and but this is at the amount of money that companies needed to spend back then just to get people online and just to educate them about what the internet is vastly different today. I mean, today you have, you know, 7 billion people who are connected via mobile phones. You have 3 billion internet users in terms of desktop users. And you don't have to get people online. You have to figure out how do you get them to adopt this difficult, challenging technology that is blockchain that still needs to be demystified from a user experience and scalability standpoint. Regardless of where you think we're at in terms of blockchain and crypto, make no doubt about it that we're in the beginning of a massive cultural phenomenon. If you think about millions of people around the world questioning national currencies, willing to adopt global, cross-border, frictionless, decentralized currencies and technology, this is a big cultural phenomenon. I mean, this is kind of, you know, think that, you know, a few years from now, we'll be looking back on this and saying, remember when people first started sharing things on Facebook? And you said, are people really going to do this? Are people really going to be uploading their photos or checking their, putting their status of I am at BetaWorks right now on Facebook? Or, you know, when people first started to tweet, people first started to share their stories on Snapchat, Instagram. That's kind of where we're at right now in terms of people just starting to say, we don't need to, you know, rely and trust the national currency. We can just transfer money and transfer data between ourselves and build new types of applications and experiences that don't rely on the institutional middlemen. And I think it's, you know, 10 years from now we'll look back on this and say this is going to have massive impact on society overall in terms of the breaking down kind of a lot of the power concentration of large national corporations and national governments as well. And so I think we're at the very beginning of understanding what this cultural phenomenon is all about. And it's also, you know, a big technology phenomenon in terms of decentralization. And, you know, the internet that we know of is basically, you know, controlled by a very small number of companies today. Facebook, you know, and Google account for 90% of the online advertising. Apple, you know, and, you know, Samsung control the mobile phone market with a couple of upstarts, you know, coming along. You have companies like Tencent and Facebook controlling messaging worldwide. And, you know, it's a very small number of companies who control the internet today. And this is the opportunity for, you know, things to basically be built from the grounds up and built around, you know, human and people empowerment. Now, will it happen? Will it take hold? We don't know yet. You know, right now, all of the blockchain technology is still building on AWS. So you still got to pay someone to use the servers. But we're at the beginning of something that both the cultural phenomenon and the technology phenomenon that could have huge implications for many years to come. And make no doubt about it, though, what it is fueling is an incredible wave of innovation. This is a slide actually from about 6 months ago even, which is showing some of the companies that have been involved in developing protocols, you know, very early kind of infrastructure in the blockchain space. And, you know, protocols are, you know, this is not the sexy application layer. This is, you know, how do you actually get kind of the infrastructure to work to enable things to move smoothly and to, you know, say transfer something from one point to another point and have it actually work every time at a scalable kind of level. And we're now at a place where, you know, anyone can write a smart contract. This actually is the Ethereum smart contract code for creating your own ERC-20 token. So if you know how to write Solidity, you can, you know, use this code and write a token. It's not that easy though, but it's open. It's open source for anyone to do it. Today in 2018, anyone can then deploy that contract and so publish it. So, you know, you have everything you need open source to write a smart contract, to deploy an ERC-20 token, and then deploy it, kind of, you know, send it out into the world. And, you know, if you trust yourself enough to use my Ether wallet or other sources, you can transfer money to someone without any intermediaries. How many folks here have used my Ether wallet? So a small handful. My Ether wallet is not a bank. Be careful with your private key. How many of you tried to explain to your mother what a private key is? Okay, 3 or 4. So that's a tough one. But what are we trying to do here, right? We were trying to figure out is how do we bridge this gap? How do we bridge this gap from, you know, 25 million crypto wallets today to, you know, the global internet users? And that's going to take a lot of innovation. Now, if we can get there, there's all sorts of benefits. And without getting into too much detail, We're going to tell the story of the benefits of tokenization through a company called Unsplash, which John mentioned in the introduction. How many folks here have heard of Unsplash? If you've ever seen a presentation that has big, pretty pictures like these, that's an Unsplash photo. Unsplash is integrated into Medium, it's integrated into Trello. It has 6 billion photo views per month on Unsplash. I mean, this is a massive service. And for companies like Unsplash, the benefits of tokenization, our potential is tremendous of kind of of adopting a blockchain token. So how do you create an economy within your application that has people who are earning tokens for contributing to the community? Let's say in Unsplash's case, it could be, for instance, uploading photos for photographers that are high valued or maybe in categories that are well searched or sought after. It could be rewarding based on whether those photos are downloaded. It could be micropayments. It could be transfers between individuals who, if I like your photo, could we transfer a token from me to you or from the system from Unsplash to the photographer? And if it's a penny or 2 penny at a time, you could never do that with fiat, but you could do that with a blockchain token. And having these kind of incentives and reward structures, we have people who are earning tokens, people who are spending the tokens, people who are buying the tokens and then transferring the tokens, that enables you to have an economy within an app. And ultimately what companies like Unsplash want is, how do you rely less on the big guys, Facebook and Google, for growth and engagement and re-engagement of your users, and instead invest in your users and invest in your product, have the product grow itself? A simple way to think about it is, let's say if it costs an app $10 to acquire a new customer, would you rather spend, say, $3 investing in incentivizing your users to do the behaviors that are going to grow engagement and invest the other $7 into building a better product? I think most app developers would say yes, but it's been very hard to do until you think about things like a blockchain token. We actually can develop a system where people can earn tokens, and when they earn it, it's theirs. It's theirs in the sense that they own it in their crypto wallet. They can convert it into other currencies. They can cash it out, as opposed to virtual point systems where there's always this concern or fear of the rules might be changed on the users at any moment in time. If you think about airline reward programs, we all get caught up in playing the game of the airline reward program. What you forget is that it's also a big black box program where the airline can change the rules at any moment in time. You don't really own the points that you earn, so you can't exchange it for other things. You can only use those points for whatever the airline says you can use it for, and they set the price. And so with blockchain, you have the ability to set up whole new types of rewards and incentive programs to monetize and transmit data through blockchain transfers with every token transfer in ways that you haven't been able to do before. And we'll go into some examples of this. So back to Unsplash. So I want to tell a little bit about Unsplash because it's just such a great story and really a company that's just ripe for tokenization. And it also speaks to what you need to build in order to make tokenization and blockchain possible for companies at scale. So first, just give you some data on Unsplash. Unsplash is huge. I mean, it's like this company that I think a lot of people have used Unsplash. They've all seen Unsplash's photos, but not many folks realize just how big it is. Unsplash has 6 million photo views per month. And just a couple of months ago, it was 5 billion. And so it's growing very quick. I'll show a chart on the next slide. It's some like 700 million API calls per month, 450 million photos downloaded every month. And a photo that's featured in Unsplash actually gets more views than a photo that's on the front page of the New York Times or the best photos on Instagram. Instagram photos are fleeting. It's like 24 hours, 48 hours that kind of gets likes and then it kind of drops. Unsplash photos actually get more and more views and more usage over time. Some of the most incredible cohort data I've ever seen in any kind of application. And this is Unsplash's growth, right? And so what they're really proving here, so Unsplash is 10 photo downloads per second. Versus I think it's Shutterstock here, which is 5 photo downloads per second and has a market cap of $1.2 billion. And Unsplash did this by basically setting photos free. What does that mean? All right, so what they did is they said, photographers, upload your best photos. We'll let you do 10 photos at a time and we'll highly curate and make sure it's only your best photos. And then they built algorithms and systems for basically to tell what are the photos that people are searching for the most and actually using the most. And downloading and kind of and getting value from. And so as opposed to the kind of traditional stock photography market, which would charge you $500, $1,000 to buy a photo, Unsplash made all the photos free, and photographers love it. Photographers love it because for a couple of reasons. One is because every time someone views a photo on Unsplash, it builds the photographer's reputation. It builds their ability to get downstream revenue and to build kind of a client base and a fan base. And this is hugely important because we've gone from a place where it used to be a very small number of people who were professional photographers to now having massive creative class. I mean, so many Unsplash photos are taken with iPhones and then used by hundreds of millions of people around the world. And so what Unsplash wants to do is to, they've already begun decentralized photography, and now they want to build an economy around this. An economy around this is not just saying, let's just charge for photo downloads again, but let's build an economy where we reward people for taking actions that benefit the community. So uploading photos that are downloaded very often, so that's an indication that actually people are searching for them and finding value from them. For rewarding people for helping their machine learning actually learn better and better what the photo is all about. And so the tagging of the photo, the crediting of the photo, the attribution for API partners, for distributing the photos around the web. And for enabling people like this guy, Jeff Sheldon, to have 140 million views of his photos on Unsplash. And so Jeff Sheldon, he has basically turned from an amateur photographer to earning a living from Unsplash without Unsplash really enabling any monetization yet. So they're looking at how do they use a blockchain token to actually turn this amazing growth story into a functioning economy. So what do they want to do with blockchain? So one is they want to create a fair, open, rewarding economy, right? And to say fair and open, they want to be that it is not about Unsplash setting the rules, it's about the users themselves providing the best photos and setting the terms and participating under the in an economy where everyone feels like they have a fair shake and they keep the money that they're earning. It has to be global, so the photographers and the users exist all around the globe. They have national currencies, they use all sorts of different currencies, and what a blockchain token will allow them to do is be able to transfer between themselves without worrying about cross-border fees currency fluctuation. And it has to be trusted. It has to be done in a way where, Unsplash couldn't just launch a point system. The community wouldn't trust that, what happens if Unsplash devalues the points or if Unsplash changes how much it costs to spend, how many points it costs to buy something. As I said, they want to incentivize high-value actions. They also want to reward micro-actions, so the little things, if you do one little step, one little action that helps the community to being able to do a token transfer from one person to another. And ultimately, what they want to do is they want to create a full-loop economy within Unsplash. And what we mean by that in terms of a full-loop economy is that you have some people who are earning tokens. You have other people who maybe they aren't contributors, so they don't earn tokens, so they maybe take money out of their wallet to buy tokens. Almost think about equivalent to, say, like online games where you have people who are really good at playing the game and so they earn the next level, and other people, they want to skip the line, so they buy to level up. And then you have people, lots of places, sinks, like it's called in the online game industry, where people can spend the tokens. And so you can imagine a photographer at Unsplash is earning tokens as people value their photos. They're then spending the tokens on better, maybe it's editing tools, on better ways to get featured. They may be earning more tokens when people are contacting them through a bidding system to hire them for work. Maybe they're responding to a market rate for photos that are kind of in high demand. So for instance, you go to Unsplash today, they've got like the kinfolk category kind of nailed. So you can find a hipster coffee shop, no problem. But try finding a photo of a doctor's office, not as easy. And so creating a market rate for kind of photos that are high in demand. So all this stuff can be done with a blockchain token, and this is all part of creating this kind of full loop buy, earn, and sell kind of economy. Now, this is kind of like a geeky chart, kind of representing this, but the theory here is that you have some actors who would be buying tokens. You have other actors to be earning tokens. Maybe, it really depends on one economy versus the next, but typically, in this example, your power users are earning the token, so they're the ones who perhaps are the ones who are contributing to the community the most, so it's like your top 1% or 5% of users who are adding the content. You can say an example of, let's say, like let's say if it was a service like the next version of Yelp or something. You know, you have 1% of users who are writing the reviews and everyone else is benefiting from them. And so those might be the people who are earning the token, if people are finding the content contributions valuable. Other people might be buying the token in order to pay for services, and you want everyone spending the token and as much as possible within the network, and then some people actually selling the token, which means kind of transferring out, still got to pay your rent in US dollar as of today. So Unsplash wants a blockchain token, but it's actually really, really hard for them to do this themselves. So if you remember a couple slides back, the Solidity code I showed in terms of if they wanted to write their own token, they could. But Unsplash is, you know, remarkably a team of 15 people that has these 6 billion photo views. 15 people. They don't have a blockchain developer on their team. They're not about to randomize their business by kind of turning the entire company into a blockchain business overnight. They're focused on building the best Unsplash right now. But they want the same thing that every other consumer internet company wants, right? So every consumer internet company, you know, wants to be able to, you know, increase engagement, increase growth, increase monetization without relying on the big guys, without relying on Facebook and Google to help them get there. And so this aha is, well, a blockchain token could be kind of a ticket to getting there. But this stuff's really, really hard and very expensive and has all sorts of risk. And so I think we've all heard some kind of the ICO perils. And you know, really ICO projects, or good ICO projects are really at the protocol level. They're kind of building infrastructure. That's really what the regulations increasingly are supporting, is that ICOs are for companies that are providing, there has to be a reason for the token, a utility behind the token. A company like Unsplash, they could, you know, they don't need their own token. They could build on someone else's token. That would be hard for them to pass kind of the SEC regulatory kind of hurdle for launching their own kind of crypto token. And they also would face all sorts of challenges in terms of the readiness for the technology, the ability for their team to manage a blockchain implementation. And so I wrote on the right side of this slide here just some of the things that they'd have to think through. So one is scalability. So the blockchain technology holds tons of promise in terms of, you know, token transfers and data transfers and money transfers between individuals all around the world. But the blockchain networks today have not figured out, you know, scalability at consumer grade. So for instance, Ethereum can handle about 850,000 transactions per day. And there's a lot of efforts underway to scale Ethereum, and we're going to talk about how we're working on scaling Ethereum by moving transactions off of public Ethereum but still on public blockchains. So scalability is a big issue that, let's say, Unsplash would have to address, and they'd have to build their own scalability solution if they did this themselves. Another is an issue called key management. So I asked before, you know, who owns a private key and who has, you know, talked to their mom about a private key, right? So imagine Unsplash trying to educate all of its tens of millions of users about private keys and having to work on building its own key management solution. And then imagine, like, so the whole notion with crypto is that when you own your key, it's your key and no one else knows it. So Unsplash, you know, what happens when someone emails Unsplash customer support and says, I lost my crypto key and I lost all my Unsplash tokens. And so Unsplash would have to come up with an answer for how do they manage, do key management, which are these very complex things to consider. Token rules, and so this is basically how do you program smart contracts to meet the business rules of Unsplash. So we're getting very specific to make sure that the smart contract meets the business requirements. And then, you know, even if you got all that far, you still have to, Unsplash would still have to figure out how to integrate a KYC, Know Your Customer, AML, anti-money laundering. And every single Unsplash in the world would have to figure out their own crypto to fiat kind of exchange process. So this is a lot, right? So what I mean by this is, imagine if every Unsplash and every other, you know, every company like it had to, you know, not just implement all this stuff, but also figure out the regulations behind how they can enable you to take your Unsplash tokens and convert it to US dollar when you want to go pay your rent. And so these are hard stuff to figure out. And then also, you know, none of this comes with, you know, management dashboards if you build it yourself. And, you know, we're also used to kind of a really robust business and consumer user experiences. And so that's essentially the aha that we had behind when we started SimpleToken, OST, Open SimpleToken, was, you know, this is what companies rely on software for and services. That, you know, if you want to, you know, use CRM in your company, you don't build it yourself, you rely on Salesforce. If you want use, you know, messaging, Uber and Airbnb, they could have built their own messaging, but they didn't. They use Twilio to send messaging to their users. If you wanted to use, you know, video conferencing, you don't build your own video conferencing. You could. There's protocols out there, but you don't. You use something like Zoom or Skype or something. You know, most of the internet today, at least, you know, the kind of startups, all use Stripe when it comes to payments. You know, no one builds their own payment processor. I remember, you know, 7 years ago when I started an e-commerce company, 8 years ago, you know, it took us a couple months to integrate Braintree. Today, it's like 30 minutes to integrate Stripe. No one builds this stuff from scratch anymore or even does it the hard way. And then, you know, everyone relies on AWS for everything, right? And or the equivalent, right? And so this was kind of our aha behind, you know, creating, you know, OST Simple Token was, you know, we started working with the Unsplashes of the world and said, well, how, what do we need to build in order to help bridge this gap between, you know, blockchain and mainstream? And so I'm going to turn over to Ben to talk through some of the technology that we've been working on. And but the problems that we set out to solve for companies like Unsplash, there's a lot of them. But I want to point out five that we really said are these are core to kind of guiding our roadmap and what we're building at Simple Token. The first is scalability. As I said, you know, public Ethereum doesn't scale. You know, if you're going to have an application like Unsplash with 5 billion, 6 billion photo views per month and turn all those events and, you know, have them all be token transfers on a blockchain, you've got to build scalable solutions. And, you know, Unsplash isn't even the largest company that we're talking to. It's just the one that, you know, we're using here. And so, you know, this is, you know, how do you create, you know, blockchain scalability at internet, you know, grade? And then the second is usability. You saw, you know, the... You know, usability of blockchain today is still early days. It reminds me of that, you know, the 20-year later version of the Mosaic browser. But the expectations of both consumer users and of business users is very high when it comes to user experience. And so that's something that we set out to kind of to work on as well. Integration. So, you know, everyone expects a RESTful API for everything these days, and that's something that we set out to provide. Is that, you know, you should be able to integrate blockchain technology very easily within your app to do so in a plug and play kind of manner in a matter of seconds, kind of like implementing Stripe, and also not just not just integrating technology, but also integrating into the world around us, into regulations and the environment and society that we live in. Trust. So, you know, this is a very big, you know, kind of issue is that, you know, people need to trust that when they earn an Unsplash token, that no one can ever take it away from them, that it has value, and that they can transfer it and trade it for something else, which speaks to the last point is also we have to solve for things like liquidity. So when you earn that Unsplash token, you know, you still pay your rent in US dollar, and you got to find, make sure that there's a way to actually somehow exchange out of that token to something that you can actually pay your rent with. And so these are five big, big things that we kind of, you know, challenges that we took on as we built the OST technology stack. We're very, very early in the, you know, in building this. But frankly, so is every company in blockchain. And anyone who tells you otherwise is just, you know, shilling and telling you a story. I mean, this stuff is going to take many, many years to perfect. And we're just, you know, we stand on the shoulders of everyone who came before us and everyone who's working with us in the industry, all trying to build this technology together. And we have a very big technology stack that we're building. But I must emphasize, and I'm sure Ben will as well, it's, you don't go this alone. There's a reason why the blockchain, you know, space is full of open source technology. It's a reason why we open source everything at the protocol level, you know, that we're working on, is because it's going to take many, many teams around the world to perfect this stuff and to build together. And it's going to take time. And anyone who tells you otherwise, they're just telling you a story. So this is what we do at OST. You can go to our website. I'm not going to give you a big sales pitch. This is what I really wanted Ben to walk you through, our technology stack and some of the considerations that have gone into it.
So yeah, to connect with what Jason just said, right? Like, we're not building this alone, and we have taken up quite a large mission here. But where this really came from, then personally from my side, was I'd been building these types of technologies, decentralized technologies, since 2014. And really what brought the message home with Jason was that if we don't get user adoption of these technologies, they still don't matter. You can build the nicest geeky things, but if no one uses it, it's just still sitting there in GitHub. So So that's really where sort of we took the focus and started asking, okay, if we have these first systems that we call Web3 technologies, what are the missing technology pieces that we need to build for them to be connected or injected to the existing digital platforms that we have, where the millions of users are, and for those users to start seamlessly adopting those Web3 technologies, right? So really the setup of the stack really started from that main driver of building a smooth zero threshold curve for getting millions of people who have no idea what a private key is and what cryptocurrencies are, getting them interacting with it, and then as they learn, grow into this new technology and grow it from there. But then if I take a moment to sort of geek out, the way that we sort of built the stack is really around the OpenSSD protocol in the middle, right? And as sort of as a primer for that, we chose the Ethereum community for its developer community. There is no blockchain project out there that currently matches the richness of people actively contributing back to the Ethereum community. And so while this is a very big stack, we also try to make sure that the components we're building are modular and reusable and serve one logical function. And on that point, for the people, I don't know, first of all, who knows what Ethereum is? I guess most people, right? We went over those questions. Who knows what sharding is or heard about it? So there are a lot of work goes into how do you scale Ethereum, and the most dominant approach to that is let's try to follow the database approach where the resources can be sort of better managed rather than everyone doing everything. Let's try to distribute who does what, right? Like at the highest level. Trick question, who read the original OpenSSD white paper that we put out? Probably no one. There you go, a few people. Our own folk don't count. So really the core of what everything revolves around is OpenSSD, right? It solves for the sharding problem of Ethereum, the scaling problem of Ethereum, by combining it also with the business problem. So what we do at the protocol layer of OpenSSD is we shard per token. We say like these tokens, these OSD tokens are now going to be represented as this new token, and so we can group them on Ethereum mainnet and then have the high volume transactions on auxiliary systems. But now we sort of split the system into parts and we want to make sure that it is a decentralized system. And so that's why on the lower part of the stack, there's OpenSSD Mosaic, which ironically is also the browser name of the olden days. But the reason that we call it Mosaic is that we now have sort of cut these pieces into the system into different pieces. And we want to make sure that in a decentralized manner, they are glued back together, right?
We're going to finish up there. Firstly, because we're running out of time, but secondly, because Ben goes even deeper into the tech behind what they're building. Maybe we'll save that for another day. Contact us if you'd like to hear it. So to recap, this was a discussion about taking blockchain mainstream, recorded at Betaworks Studios, the club for builders in New York City. Studios is like the best bit of a conference, the bit where you get to hang out and chat, eat free snacks, but without having to worry about name tags. For membership info, visit betaworks-studios.com. You heard from Jason Goldberg and Ben Boland from OST, Open Simple Token. They can be reached at ost.com. Jason is at BetaShop on Twitter. No wonder he's been a member of the BetaWorks community for so long. And Ben is Benjamin Boland. Ben's Twitter profile reads, "I build love," which seems like a great place to end. Subscribe to Builders and more episodes will magically pop up in your feed, including an episode on designing for blockchain, featuring Sarah Baker Mills from Consensus and Connie Yang from Coinbase.
It's really fucking exciting. I'm sorry for the swears.
I'm Layla Oweda. This was Builders. Until next time, happy building.